Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Solo pod, a little draft reaction. I'll do the NBA in the second segment coming up. But, you know, part of the reason I'm doing a solo podcast, usually this ends so late on a Thursday night into Friday morning. By the time you get somebody on and record it, just getting it up the next morning and, you know, asking people to come on midnight Eastern is not the easiest thing. But it actually went by pretty quickly. And to me, the takeaway for a night and a draft that just, how many times do we say leading up to this that there's not a lot of juice to this draft, not a lot of excitement's kind of sneaking up on you? For a draft that did not have a lot of juice and anticipation, what an insane night it turned out to be. It started out with, well, the Vrabel-Rossini thing kind of hung over the whole day, which, you know, I'll get to just quickly here in a minute. But the odds swing, and we all know, obviously, the draft started at two, Reese or Bailey, Bailey or Reese, and it swung back. Man, I swear each guy was favored five or six different times, including on Thursday, the day of the draft, each guy was favored multiple times. But the last move you figure is the correct move. Somebody knows something. Reese, middle of the day, flips to minus $2 somewhere. And I guess Mitch Moss had this tweet, follow the money, that minutes before the draft, or if Reese was about minus 1,700 on the prediction market. So just wild movement on Reese. Somebody thought they knew on Reese. And you know what? It ended up not being the case. All the stuff of, you know, canceling the visits, all of that stuff. And Bailey ended up being the guy. So that was a nice plus price. Love goes third, which, look, taking a running back that high, we need all that stuff. That's, to me, that's just not the way you do it. I know once, you know, sometimes we all gang up on a pick and everyone's against it and ends up being right. I mean, 3 years ago, the Lions took Gibbs and everyone said, you can't take a running back that high. You need all this other stuff. Lions actually had a pretty good team. Remember, that was coming off a year where they almost made the playoffs. And they had two first-round picks. They took Gibbs and they took Campbell, a linebacker. And Gibbs looks like he's going to be just a tremendous Hall of Fame player. But last year with Genty, there was skepticism about picking a player at that, you know, high of a position with all of their needs, and it ended up, at least so far, looking like, you know what, that criticism is justified. So who knows? At least it does make you fun with Love, Marvin Harrison Jr., McBride. You know, Wilson's a decent player, but boy, you need so much stuff. You're that bad of a team to take a running back third overall. I mean, by the time you get good, I mean, what, it's going to take you a couple years to get good, and you know, you have a very brief shelf life with these running backs where they're at their absolute peak. So I don't really get that. I don't really like that, but I know it's a weaker draft, and everyone, you know, has a higher grade on him than a lot of these other players. So I get it from that perspective, but didn't like it. And then the big curveball, Carnell Tate, the receiver from Ohio State, number four. Man, I must have looked at 100 mock drafts. I don't know that anyone had Tate at four. I know somebody, I think, tweeted into Gilshow to a numbers game on Thursday and said, you know what, watch the Titans for Tyson, the other receiver, the receiver from Arizona State, because I watch the Titans, I'm familiar with the Titans, they desperately need a receiver, watch them take Tyson. Well, right church, wrong pew, because they take Tate against 27-1, I guess minutes before the draft on the prediction markets, way out of nowhere. And Julian Edlow from DraftKings, we've had on, had this tweet that they had a bunch of different exact order of the top five, including exact orders that were so unlikely, unpredictable, that they went up to 160-1, some of them, 160-1 odds. None of those included Tate going four. So by four, everyone's mock draft was completely blown up. Reese falls to five, and he's minus 1,700 to go two. He ends up going five. Then you get another curveball with the Chiefs trading up to six, which, why? I know they didn't give up a ton. As I'm watching this, the Raptors hit every three known to man to, looks like, beat the Cavs and cut this to a 2-1 series lead. I'll get to the NBA in a minute. I swear they've hit about seven straight threes here to kill the Cavs sweep bet, but it's okay. Other bets are looking okay in the NBA. But the Chiefs throw this curveball where they move up from 9 to 6 to get the corner. I guess unless you thought the Saints or maybe Washington was going to take him, I guess it's possible. But, and you give up a three, gave up a five, but that guy was likely going to be there at nine. When I say he's likely going to be there at nine, I mean, who the hell knows? We didn't think Tate was going to go four. We didn't think all these other things were going to happen. It's a very unpredictable draft. I was just surprised to, that they made that move. But you know what? I guess they know what they're doing. They've said, hey, we can't risk it. But they moved up. That was unusual for him to go six, for the LSU corner to go six. And just a wild night The other one that was, Downs, I thought was a good pick for the Cowboys. They gave up some picks to move up one spot to get him. And look, it's you could say, why would you give up picks? You're the next pick. Well, they probably had some fear either Miami was going to take him or Miami was going to trade the pick to somebody that was going to take him. So that was interesting. But then Simpson goes 13 to the Rams. That was had been rumored. That wasn't completely out of nowhere, but that's at least controversial, debatable in terms of like, you know what? You got how many chances to win a championship with Stafford? You were probably the best team last year if it weren't for a couple of fluky plays on that Thursday night game. And then a Sunday night game, the NFC title game on that Sunday, you easily could have won. You were probably the best team. You could have easily been holding up the trophy. Why don't you get somebody that's going to help you now? Get Bane or get Mekhi Lemon. Get a win now player. But you could also look at it and say, well, how many times are you going to be picking 13? The best time to pick a quarterback is when you're not desperate, when you don't need one, because when you need one, you overdraft or you overpay. So I see both sides of it. I mean, the answer is going to come down to how good is Ty Simpson, and not the biggest fan, but he does end up in a good spot with McVay. But that was one where, you know, you got some longer numbers. I saw the Rams were like 10-1 to pick a quarterback. Rams were 6-1 to get Simpson. Again, all these numbers move depending on when and where you saw it. I'm in Connecticut, so I'm looking offshore, things like that, at these different markets. But that was another one that was interesting. Just a wild night, a lot of fun. Some of these other picks that I liked: Minnesota gets Banks, the defensive lineman from Florida. I thought that was a good pick. Eagles get, and the Eagles always do this, they just draft well, and they draft well, but it's amazing this ability for them to draft a player and then immediately go, oh, why did somebody else get him? It's, you know, the Patriots were like this for years. I feel like the Spurs were like this for years in basketball, where it's just the Ravens to some extent, where they make a pick and you just, you know he's going to be good. Now, it's not a perfect fit because Hurts is not like a prototypical passer, but he's just so good. And that'll mean A.J. Brown probably going somewhere, probably going to the Patriots. So you pair up Devontae Smith with Lemon, who's a tremendous player. I mean, he's going to be a great, great pro. Gets open, good hands, just shifty. He's going to be a long, I'd be shocked if he's not a really, really good player. I mentioned Downs. Giants had a pretty good offseason. Giants are going to be a very trendy pick. When you have Reese and, you know, the offensive lineman from Miami here, you're going to rebuild the trenches. Harbaugh is a good coach. He can be a little overrated, but Harbaugh is a good coach. You get back to a little bit more meat and potatoes, and that's where they've been lacking, really, you know, in the trenches for years now, and that's, you know, how they won the Super Bowls. Yeah, they had Eli, and they had some good skill players, but they won with pass rushers. You can never have too many pass rushers. So they get Reese, they get an offensive lineman. That makes sense. Proctor for Miami. A lot of people think he's got bust potential. That was not a safe pick. I guess we'll see. And then Dallas comes back and gets Malachi Lawrence from UCF, another pass rusher with their pick. Mesidor went a little bit later than people might expect. He goes to the Chargers. Chargers, again, once again, should be good on defense. But I think Minnesota might have a really, really good defense. They kept Flores. Now, we'll see what they get out of Murray, but Minnesota, I really like that Banks pick, and I really like what Philly did. The Jets get Sadiq. Maybe, who knows, maybe you pair him with Dante Moore next year, but just a fun night. A lot of long shots, man. Nobody really knew anything. I guess most of the mocks, I mean, Jeremiah is the one you go to, and his last mock did have Bailey 2, did have Love 3. And that's the thing I mentioned the other day. Like, once you get one curveball, once you get one piece of the puzzle that's out of place, the whole puzzle gets messed up. And then Tate DeFord just kind of threw everything into chaos. So a fun night, really fun night, really unpredictable, with a lot of different things happening that you wouldn't expect. And as we're recording this, still got 4 or 5 different picks to go. So we'll see if any more madness ensues. And big takeaway was I'm surprised. Yeah, I'm surprised Kansas City would trade up to go up 3 spots. I mean, Glazer was hinting that, hey, there's some big bombshell is coming. I can't report it. I wouldn't think that was it. I mean, you moved up 3 spots. That's not the end of the world. And, you know, you probably could have stayed pat and picked him. Simpson to the Rams was a minor surprise, but not a shocker. But fun night. Really fun night. And, you know, what lurked over everything was the whole Vrabel-Rossini thing, where every 10 minutes you look and there's more pictures from 2 years ago and 5 years ago and 6 years ago, and they're at bars and they're at wherever. And you knew, or at least I had a suspicion, and it makes some sense, Wednesday night, early Thursday morning, there's the report. Vrabel's not going to be there for day three of the draft. He's going into counseling, which I know it's day three, but you know how these coaches are. It's the draft. You figured maybe there's more coming here. Maybe there's more pictures. There's more to this story here, as the Raptors might have just hit about their 20th straight three to go about 20 points here. I know live play-by-play on a game, you probably don't care about that on a podcast you're going to listen to hours later, but I'm just shocked. I'd love to go back and look at the play-by-play. The Raptors hitting 1,000 threes here as they're going to get their first game of the series, and they're going to make this a 2-1 series. You figured there was more to the Vrabel stuff, though. He wouldn't just say, you know what, I'm going to go to counseling middle of the draft, end of the, you know, it's the end of the draft, but I'm not going to go to counseling during the draft if that was it and there's nothing to it. So you figured there was probably more coming, another story coming, and the rest of the story did come down. I don't know if they're going to fire him. It did cross my mind that, you know what, at what point is this going to put Vrabel in jeopardy? And I don't want to hear people comparing, you know, Sherrod Moore lost his job. Sherrod Moore, it was different. It was an employee, Sherrod Moore. And Sherrod Moore, and I said at the time, he wasn't a good coach. If they were 11-0, you know, or 12-0, that when that story broke, hate to say it, but that story probably finds a way, has a habit, or finds a way to go away. And Vrabel, coach of the year, took his team to the Super Bowl. If he's 6-11 last year, the team, whoever his team is, the Patriots, if we're using that same example, probably say, you know what, this isn't worth it, but doesn't really affect his job, I don't think. Now, this can't be a positive for the Patriots when you look at next year, because at the very least, it's a minor distraction. I guess at the very least, it's neutral. You can't say it's a positive, but it's possible this is a distraction. He's not focused, all of those things. And plus, they're going to have a harder schedule to begin with. I don't think they're going to fire him. I guess if more continued to come out, I guess it would be possible, but it's not really affecting his coaching. I mean, it's bad PR. It's a bad look, all that stuff, but not really affecting his ability to, his job is to win football games. This doesn't affect his job in terms of that. This doesn't affect his ability to help his team win football games. Plus, if you're going to fire him, he's going to sit out a year, and he's a good coach. He's going to sit out a year and, you know, come back next year. They're going to have all the pieces about how he's different, he's changed, he's learned, all that stuff. And he's going to coach somewhere else. He's probably going to coach against you. He's going to coach the Jets, or he's going to coach, you know, Miami or one of these other teams in your division, the Texans. And he's going to be coaching against you, trying to beat you. So it's like, why get rid of him and have him coach against me? You know what? You take the bad PR. I get it's a bad look. All the stuff about accountability and, you know, no distractions. And there's definitely a double standard there. And he's created some distractions and some, you know, issues in terms of that. But I can't see, unless something else comes out. And it has crossed my mind and it's been brought up. And I wouldn't be shocked if you told me right now Vrabel is not coaching week one and just this becomes too much. I don't know. I guess it's possible, but to me, that is still unlikely. I think Vrabel will still be there, but that did kind of cast a spell over the whole day where there's just, you know, you're seeing that story updated every hour or so, and people and the jokes were rolling in on Twitter, and the jokes were good. The jokes were good. There were plenty of good ones. And it's a really, I don't get into that stuff because it's, you know, betting we're talking about, you know, who's going to win these games, but what a bizarre story. And you start to do the timeline of how long it's been going on and she's got kids and how old are they and all of those conversations, and the jokes kind of write themselves on Twitter. But just a bizarre story and really kind of a bananas day. It really was, with all the different, the Vrabel stuff, the odds on Bailey, and then the different twists and turns all throughout the early part of the first round. Was really unpredictable. And it's becoming one of those things, like, on one hand, you really like watching it on TV because the excitement, the anticipation of hearing the name announced, not knowing who the player is fun. But on the other way, I just can't watch it the same anymore, knowing I can just look at my phone and find out who the picks are going to be. And you start to get spoilers, and, you know, I'm guilty of it too, where people text, oh, Love is going to be the pick at three, the Cardinals, things like that. I miss the old school way of nobody knows and we all find out together. But when Twitter is a couple picks ahead and a couple minutes ahead, it's hard not, especially if you got money on this, it's hard not to peek at your phone. You just, the anxiety takes over and, you know, you want to see who got picked. And it's just, it does kind of kill the event from a TV standpoint. It does kill the event from a TV standpoint, but it's just, it's hard not to want to know and just, you know, and look at your phone. And people will say, you know what, draft is overrated. I'll just let me know the next day who went where, which I understand. And it's just, at the end of the day, it's a guy reading names off a piece of paper. I get that. But there is fun just in the moment of who you expect to be picking, who you expect to be picked, and just guessing who's going to be picked, the anticipation, and you get surprised. If everything just went as ordered, which has happened in recent years to some extent, Penix was a shocker a couple years ago. He had a few surprises last year. But if you just get chalk, it's not as fun. But when you're watching live, I mean, that is fun to track live and watch live when you get these surprises. And we got plenty of them here on Thursday night. When we come back, though, NBA, I'll get into the games for this weekend, some takeaways from Thursday night. That is next. This Should Have Been More podcast. All right, we are back. Should Have Been More podcast. Let's do some NBA. What a game that was in the middle of the first round and what added to the night and ended up being a really good sports night. I'm not sure, you know, get much drama out of, Raptors, like I mentioned, are running away with it. That's going to be 2-1 Cavs. We'll see if the Cavs can even it, if they even it. I guess there's a little drama going into game 5, but you figure the Cavs probably win this, whether it's 5-6 or, if you got to a game 7, who knows? But with the way the Cavs dominated those two games at home, you don't figure there's much drama or suspense there. Minnesota off to a big lead. I will tell you this without knowing the result of that game, and this will be up, before we finish it. Regardless, even if Denver wins game 3, Denver's in big trouble without Gordon. These injuries already have taken their toll on the playoffs. The Lakers guys, Durant misses game 1, even though he's been back. But Jalen Williams gets hurt for OKC, and Gordon just can't seem to stay healthy. And there's just, it feels like every year the team kind of craters and falls apart around Jokic from an injury standpoint. A couple years ago, it was Murray with the shin. Last year, Gordon got hurt, had the hamstring in the playoffs. Now Gordon's hurt again. And that quickly can be a very dangerous series for Denver here. And obviously Wembanyama with the concussion. So there's a lot of injury concerns. It makes the card on Friday tougher, which I'll get to. But just quickly, what a game it was. Knicks and Hawks. Just a terrible, terrible loss for the Knicks. A heartbreaking loss for the Knicks. When you consider they fought all the way back. They had chances to put the game away. They get an offensive rebound late up one. They had a couple chances. When you come back like that and you take the lead, you feel like, all right, maybe you could put it away. They couldn't do it. Give McCollum credit. He hits the big shot at the end. It felt like everyone hit just about every shot except for, the Knicks, that sequence with just under a minute left before the McCollum shot when they missed, got an offensive rebound. And then I think this shot, they missed again, and the possession ended on a shot clock violation with the missed shot from Brunson. And then Brunson turned it over again towards the end of the game pretty much, and that was that. But tough for the Knicks. I would say this, the winner of game 4 probably is going to win the series. If the Hawks get up 3-1, I figure they'll probably figure out a way to get one of the next three. If the Knicks can square it up at 2, then it's a best 2 out of 3. You get 5 at home, you get 7 at home, and you're probably in good shape. So I'd be pretty confident the winner of game 4 wins the series. That being said, if you don't win the series in the Knicks, how do you bring Mike Brown back? I mean, you could argue, I know Thibodeau wasn't a great coach. But you fired him for not making the finals. He got to game 6 of the Eastern Conference Finals, and you fired him. Right, hey, I got a finals team. I need a better coach. Okay. You bring in Mike Brown, he's going to lose in the first round. You got to get rid of him, don't you? I think you would have to. Now, we're not there yet, but I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all if this is Atlanta in 6. And you'll go back to game 1, game 2, a game you never should have let get away. If you go up 2-0, it's probably feels like a much different series. And now all of a sudden you look up and you're down 2-1. And I would say it's a must win in game 4, because even though I would favor whoever wins game 4 to win the series, it's different when you're down 3-1 and you've got 5-7 at home. It's like, all right, you come out in game 5. We're home. We're desperate. We win that one. It's 3-2. All you gotta do is win that one, and then you force a game 7. Advantage kind of swings back to you. And I always say this too. If you're serious about winning the series as the lower seed, as the underdog, kind of have to be up 3-1. It's just not easy to win that, pull the upset and win the series when you're 2-2 and you got to win 5 or 7 on the road. I just feel like the longer the series goes, the harder it is to break through with home court. So we'll see here. That will be an interesting one. These series got some juice. And, speaking of the series that have juice, I mean, I didn't expect the Lakers to be up 2-0. What an awful performance from the Rockets. Rockets laying 8.5 on Friday night. You get 3 games Friday night. Celtics laying 7.5 to Philly. Total 215.5, and Boston's in a similar position where, all right, you let one game get away, no big deal. Well, if you fall behind two, if you get an injury, if you lose another one, things could get very dicey very quickly here. I would expect them to bounce back. They've been very good off of losses the last two or three postseasons and not letting things snowball and spiral. We'll see if they can do it again here. Laying 7.5. Don't really have any interest in that one from a betting standpoint. The Rockets laying 8.5 to LA seems a bit high because they just can't score. Like, they're just so bad on offense. That being said, the Rockets are the better team than this version of the Lakers. And when you have the better team that's home and desperate, that's usually not a time to step in front of the favorite there. So that's usually not a time to take the points. I know it looks like a lot of points, and it is a lot of points, but I don't really have an interest in the Lakers. But I certainly don't want to lay the 8.5. If anything, it would be under 206.5, because to me, that has just been a rock fight of a series. Houston, boy, that offense is brutal. Their offense is almost just, you know, wait till there's 10 seconds on the shot clock, throw up a brick, hope to get an offensive rebound, and hope to put it back. I mean, they're horrible on offense. And this is a team with Durant, one of the great scorers of all time, and they're just so bad. There's no spacing. There's no shooting other than Durant. They're really painful to watch, and the Lakers certainly limited too. I will say this about LeBron. People get sick of LeBron for good reason sometimes. You know, it's hard. He's been in our lives for 25 years. It's hard for anyone to be in the spotlight for 25 years and for us not to find some reasons to get annoyed with him. I know he reads fake books and he's pretending to read the books, and, you know, he does certain things. He likes the attention. He's dramatic. I get all of the reasons people don't like him. But think about everything he's done in his career. A couple weeks ago, he's the third option on this team behind Luka, behind Reeves. They both get hurt, and it's like, all right, LeBron, you got to save us. You got to carry us. With this team of scraps around him, Luke Kennard and Marcus Smart and Hachimura, and he's got him up to, if he could get them to the next round, man, this would be just an incredible testament to his brilliance as a player. And I get why people get sick of him. I completely understand it. The Jordan LeBron debate is so, you know, overplayed and tired. Have no interest in getting into that. LeBron's longevity is obviously better than what Jordan did, but Jordan, you know, at his peak, he just basically won the title every year until he retired for the second time. And 6-0 in the final speaks for itself. But what a performance for LeBron to get this team to 2-0. And now that series is very interesting. I would go under the 208.5. Spurs Blazers is really hard because it's all about Wembanyama. Is he going to play? Spurs laying 2.5, total 220.5. If Wembanyama doesn't play, these teams are just about even from a talent standpoint. If Wembanyama does play, and that was a bad loss by the Spurs the other night, Tuesday night, up big, even without Wembanyama, up 11 the last quarter or so, put the game away, you're up 2-0, you don't really have to worry about Wembanyama, you got a game to play with. Now, if Wembanyama can't go in either of these two games, and it sounds like he's trending in the right direction, although if he was trending in the right direction, probably a little bit more than 2.5, if there's more certainty he was going to play. This, to me, is like a halfway line of we're not sure if he's going to play. If he was out, this line would be lower. If he was in, this line would be a little bit higher. It's a little bit of a hybrid line. But these teams are very even if there's no Wemby. So it's just hard. If you're betting this, you're guessing, all right, I think Wemby's going to play, so I'll lay the 2.5 or vice versa. I don't really have any interest. If I had to play anything, probably take Portland plus 1.5 just in case Wemby can't go. But again, that's the same sort of thinking there where you're just making a bet on what you think is going to transpire with Wembanyama. And man, they do look like a really, really different team when he's off the court. Saturday games are good. Detroit and Orlando. Detroit laying 2.5. That series has some juice. Detroit did what teams usually do when they lose game one. I know it was tied at the half, but they took care of business in the third quarter. Never really a game after that. They took control. OKC laying 9.5 to Phoenix. Phoenix actually played a pretty good game the other night. That was just, this series is a waste of time. OKC is a lot better than them. And I hate to be the ref guy. The way OKC is officiating is just absolutely insane. They maul you on one end. They basically are playing football with you, rugby. And then if you breathe on SGA on the other end, it's a foul. It is really, I would imagine, if anything, I'd actually take the Suns here on, what's that, Saturday, 3:40 Eastern. I bet the Suns are going to get a decent whistle here because that was so egregious the way OKC was officiated the other night. I bet SGA doesn't get the whistle. I bet, you know, Phoenix goes to the foul line. if you're the refs, you have to have that in mind, or you heard the blowback, even subconsciously of, all right, we can't just gift these guys. They're good enough as it is. You can't just give them every call like that. And I hate doing that. You have people that, the Chiefs only win because of the refs, and OKC wins because of the refs. I never do that. I never talk like that. I just think that's a bad way to watch sports. But that was a ridiculous, and I had no money. I had no bet on the game. I didn't care. I was just watching it. I thought there were some crazy calls, and just in general, the discrepancy between how physical OKC is defensively and how they get officiated on the offensive end, I think is pretty crazy. Knicks and Hawks, Saturday, Knicks laying 2.5. That is obviously a huge game. So a lot of fun. Big weekend of basketball. You get the draft. You get all the baseball. Mets, man, Mets finally break the losing streak. And then Lindor's hurt, and Lindor sounds like he's hurt for a while. So just might not be their year. The Braves might win that game by 10-plus games. I know it's early, but the Braves are good. Phillies are not good. The Mets are just struggling. I know there's a lot of time left. There's a lot of head-to-head left. But this might be one of those years where it's just not your year for whatever reason. And I know, last year, 45-24, and then the wheels fell off. But this might be a year where it just doesn't happen. It might just not happen. Series prices quickly before we go. Atlanta, a -135 favorite over the Knicks. Lakers -154 over Houston, who's +130. Boston still -550 over Philly, who's 4-1. Suns and Thunder, forget it. Orlando and Detroit. Detroit now -275 over Orlando. I'd take a shot on Orlando over 2-1. I would not let that game 2 scare me. I know there's 82 games saying Detroit's much better than Orlando. To me, there's not that much of a gap between the talent. In San Antonio, -600 over Portland, +450. I don't really want to bet Portland, but that's a dangerous -600. If Wemby, gets back to Wemby, if he's good to go, you're in good shape. If he's not, that is very dicey there. They could very easily lose that series. Even if he misses the next 2 games, it could very well be Portland 3-1. And then who knows? That's a hostile building. That's a good crowd, a good fan base. They haven't been good in forever. They will be licking their chops for home playoff games. They love their Blazers. They're going to have games 3 and 4 at home. And they're going to smell blood too. And you know what? Maybe not Wemby at 100%. At +450, it's not quite enough for me to bet it. What's the correct series score here? Spurs in 7, +270. Spurs in 5, +220, I wouldn't do. Spurs in 6, +190, I wouldn't do. I don't know what the bet there is. I guess I take the 1.5, but it's very much dependent on Wemby. The one I like tomorrow, I do like the under and Lakers Suns. I think the Knicks probably get game 4, but not good enough to bet it. Not good enough to bet it. I'll have to look at that a little more. I have to go back and rewatch, this game and just kind of analyze it and think about it. I'll be on VSiN all weekend. I'll be on Friday night with Humans, 7 to 10 Eastern. Saturday with Humans, 6 to 10 Eastern. VSiN.com. So check out all the shows. I always forget to plug my stuff, so I should probably do that a little bit more. And then Sunday mornings, I think it's me and John Jastrzemski Sunday mornings. JJ, who you've heard on this podcast, SNY. He's been, FAN, he's been around. I've done a lot of different things with him, so excited to work with him. But that'll do it. I know a little bit of a different show, a little quicker show. Just wanted to get it up and out on a busy, busy sports night, a fun draft night. But appreciate you guys listening. Rate, review, subscribe. We'll be back on Monday. See you then.